White Aryan Resistance calling. White Aryan Resistance calling. This is the White Aryan Resistance Radio Network. Your host for today's show is Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy. So get a spot of tea, sit down and relax, because it's time for another show on the White Aryan Resistance Radio Network.
But since that's me, boys and girls, Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy, right here in the bunker on a snowy Thursday. It's starting to snow out. I knew there was a cold front coming in, but it's just a little bit of it on the ground now, not a lot. It's not coming down heavy, so we're safe for a little while. Thursday, December the 17th. No, wait a minute. This is Wotan's Day. David Lane's favorite day. I got to look at that clock carefully. I'll get it screwed up every time. Yeah, we're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. It's where you send your donations for the show. And if you don't have your donation in for this month, December, by now, you better watch it. I'll cut you off right at the knees. And then you won't be able to get all this up to snuff information from the biggest racist in many counties, maybe east of the Mississippi. How about that? It always reminds me when I speak of David Lane, which we were friends for a long time. But you know, all good friends have arguments once in a while. Ben Klassen and I, a whole bunch of them. We still respected each other and learned from each other, but we didn't agree with each other all the time. And Dave would call me on the phone, and he's into numerology and all that kind of stuff. And I said, Dave, just stick to basic racism, will you? And he'd get madder than hell. I should read his books. I'm sure they're great. But I have flirted around with Odinism and been to many other get-togethers. I mean, the racial Odinism, not this other kind of Odinism that's floating around today where they have niggers and everybody else come in. We love everybody, man. We had those real Odinist get-togethers where we threw the hatchets and the axes and did all kinds of stuff. I remember one time we got pretty well drunked up, and this one guy was a sort of a wrapped too tight older Nazi guy. He was a weirdo sort of, and we grabbed a hold of him and swung him around over the fire, and he was screaming his ass off. That was the same night that the rumor was that Irv Rubin was coming up to get us. And we're all around there saying, whoa, man, that's great. Irv's coming. We're going to have some fun. All we ever saw was one sheriff's car drive slowly by in the woods. Yeah, we had some good times. We had the Viking games, like I say. We threw hatchets. We had bows and arrows and all that kind of stuff. And I like that. And I love the mythical gods of the Vikings because I love to think of our people being strong like Thor and Wotan. Don't want them feeling like that Jew on a stick, which was a mythology too, but because even Odin was hung on a tree, you know. So anyhow, that's the way that goes. But I don't want no sob sister type of god. If I'm going to give reverence to a god, it's going to be a tough-ass god, man. Yeah. Well, let's see if I can get some Sling Blade stuff up here. Tomorrow we start the instruction on the early days of Adolf Hitler right on up to 45. And when I'm done, some people are going to be so pissed off they don't know what to do, and other people are going to say, God damn, I didn't know that. And other people are going to say, well, I don't give a shit. So anyhow, let me go back here in the bunker, man, where Igor usually hangs out. And it's dark back there. And I'll see if I can find another Sling Blade show, okay? Well, you never know what old Sling Blade's up to. These are shows that I don't think we've ever played, and I don't review them. And if he says Tom Metzger's a jerk, well, that's what you're going to get, because I don't edit them. Yeah, and I don't know what the hell he's going to talk about. But I'll tell you one thing, that after he got flooded out a few months ago in that big rainstorm over there in Illinois, he was so upset about that, and he'd lost a lot of his research papers and everything, that he just flat disappeared. I haven't been able to get in touch with him since, so I don't know where in the hell Sling Blade's at. I hope he's okay.
I heard about this guy named Michael C. Rupert. I guess he was one of the guys that had been blowing a whistle about the 9/11 stuff and this and that, so let's see what he has to say, see if we can glean any knowledge from him. No, we don't want to be his friend. We just want to milk him for some knowledge, information. Because information is power. Knowledge is power.
First of all, let me just say thank you, Seattle. Thank you so much to the Citizens Truth Alliance and the 9/11 Visibility Project and everybody else who contributed, who endorsed. I've heard Seattle Thunder mentioned as an endorser. Everybody who had anything to do with this, I want to say thank you very much. I know I and my good friend, my agent, publicist, Ken Levine, who made this book happen. He got the publisher, got the deal. Ken, by the way, is the former news director at KCBS Channel 2, the CBS-owned and operated TV station in Los Angeles. So we do get defections from time to time. There's a lot of great people that have put a lot of work into this tonight. And I was listening, I think, to Mike start when Mike was beginning. And he talked about saving the world. And since November the 2nd, we all know what happened on November the 2nd. What has become clear to me, especially how many people have read the essay on my site called Snap Out of It that had to do with, okay, that's most of you. I would hope that a lot of you, for those of you who have read Crossing the Rubicon or are reading it, or for those of you who are subscribers to From the Wilderness, what I'm going to show you tonight will mean a lot more to you than to the people who are new to this. That doesn't mean that the people who are new to this aren't going to walk away needing a stiff drink, a joint, or a Valium. Or whatever makes you feel better. But we will have a lot to talk about. But for me, the issue is no longer about saving the world. The world doesn't want to be saved. Get it? I'm here to save you. I'm here to save anyone who will partake of the information that I and the incredible writers at From the Wilderness, and how many people have read From the Wilderness or looked at my website? God bless you. Well, you're all familiar then with the Jamie Hex, the Stan Goffs, the Dale Allen Pfeiffers, the Michael Caines, the wonderful, wonderful men and women who tell it like it is and who bring incredible skill to that. But this is no longer about saving the world. This is no longer about having a lefty, progressive, feel-good party and rally and where we can clap and cheer and throw some money at something and go home and think we've done something. I don't know about you, but I spent 27 years of my life trying to change the world, and I've been an abject failure. How well have you done? Okay? That is not to put down on any of us. It is to acknowledge the simple facts of the world that we're living in, and that it is a fundamentally different world, and there is no going back to Kansas with Toto again. Now, inasmuch as I've written this huge book, Crossing the Rubicon, most people think it's a book just about 9/11. If you've read it, you know it's not. It goes way back before the beginning of 9/11 and lays foundations, and it goes well after 9/11, because what I have tried to construct for you is a map, a landscape, a political, economic energy landscape of the world in which we live, so that you can help, so that you can use that if you read it and use it and study it and incorporate new data into that map to ascertain and divine and map out the terrain upon which you stand. Because the world's about to change in a big way. If we're to look at 9/11, 9/11's like an elephant that's already run over us, and it's moving away. Now more than 3 years old, 3.5 years old. Now, what's more important, an elephant that's running away from you or several angry elephants that are running right at you? Which is more important to focus your attention on? So we're going to talk about 9/11, because in talking about 9/11, we're going to talk about how it was perpetrated. Because if you understand the how and the mechanisms by which government, press, the economy, the banking system, the world political landscape were manipulated to produce a 9/11, you will have a clue as to how all of those factors can be manipulated again to produce events that are yet to come, some of which we don't know what they are yet. But it's important to understand how clear-cut the case is, because then we understand that there's an old saying that insanity is repeating the same action over and over again, expecting different results. Make sense? So, you know, let's get past some of these things like, well, I'll write a letter to my congressman, or I'll write the TV station, or I'll stage a protest, or put a bumper sticker on my car. Well, that's to try to change the world. We're here to try to change ourselves and each other. You know, when you're in a... How many people have taken a commercial airplane flight? Okay. Everybody, right? What's the stewardess say when the oxygen mask comes down? Put your own mask on first, because you can't help somebody else if you can't breathe. So what I'm here to do tonight is to help you breathe better in the face of what's coming. Then you can help somebody else, and it will probably be your neighbor, people close to you, physically close to you. We must, I think, at this point, my decision, my knowledge, my belief after almost 30 years of this is that I'm not trying to save my country anymore. My country doesn't exist anymore. But let's go over a little bit of crossing the Rubicon. Michael Caine, who's a brilliant young writer, is 29 years old, in New York City, a wonderful guy. He's really into hip-hop, and he kind of came along to From the Wilderness, and he confronted some generals at the last hearing of the 9/11 Truth Commission. Because crossing the Rubicon, 600 pages, you know, he said, you know, maybe I can condense this case that Rupert makes against Vice President Cheney down to just some bullet points. And he did. He did a very good job of it. And we just, we'll have this up on the website here in a couple of days. By the way, whenever I do a presentation, I was up till 11 o'clock last night making the fresh slides for this with the freshest possible information. So there's very little here that's canned. This is like up-to-the-minute news. Crossing the Rubicon. In any homicide investigation, and not only did I work narcotics as an investigator with LAPD, I also worked homicide for a short period of time on loan, and I went through their training. In order to establish a murder conviction or homicide conviction, you have to establish means, motive, and opportunity. Three elements of the crime. Any lawyers in the room tonight? You're brave. I saw actually saw two or three hands go up. There's another one up there. Lawyers coming out of the closet. Sounds like a Jackson Brown song. Okay. Means. Dick Cheney and the Secret Service, right up here. Dick Cheney was the acting commander-in-chief on 9/11 calling the shots via the Secret Service. George Bush was reading about pet goats. George Bush was out of the loop. Where did Cheney go? He went, was rushed right down to the PEOC, the bunker underneath the White House, Presidential Emergency Operations Center, where the Secret Service had... We have established in crossing the Rubicon completely redundant a command, control, and communication system with actually better technology in some cases. And we're about to break some major stories showing and proving that my speculation that Vice President Cheney was using modified promise software to override the FAA systems, we're about to break a huge story on that. So the Secret Service has the legal authority to take supreme command over all agencies in the U.S. in times of a national emergency on U.S. soil, even the Air Force. Every agency is subordinate to the Secret Service in what are called national special security events. You can look it up on the web. Secret Service has the highest technological communication systems of any agency, as it should. On 9/11, the Secret Service had the technology to see the FAA radar screens. I found quotes saying that the Secret Service was watching every hijacked plane, all 22 of them at one time, what they thought were 22 of them at one time, on the screens, seeing in real time exactly what the air traffic controllers were seeing. Secret Service was in the decision-making loop as early as 8:15. We placed them in New York City at WTC-7. We placed them in the FAA headquarters at that time, no later than 8:45. Everything was in place on 9/11 for the commander-in-chief to have full supreme control of the Air Force and all the military via the Secret Service systems and the legal mandate. Bush was doing his thing about goats. And one of the funniest lines that I got to write in this book, it took me a long time to research, but a year and a half of nonstop backbreaking work to write this book, and there were only a few times where I really got to sit back and just laugh. Remember the story on 9/11, how the first plane, Flight 11, hit the World Trade Center, the North Tower, you know, and then the call came in, and the second plane had been hijacked, and the story was that the Secret Service agents came rushing in and grabbed Cheney and carried him down to the bunker. Well, the way I pieced everything together was, you got President Bush reading about a pet goat in a grade school, and his staff there already know about the hijackings. Now, somebody's about to put the president on the spot to take command. Now, God knows if George W. Bush had actually taken command on 9/11, we might all be nuclear toast today for his ability to handle things. But my vision came to me as I pieced this together that Dick Cheney got up out of his chair in the White House and ran to the PEOC so that he could assume hands-on control before anybody else could get there. So Bush, they stalled Bush. There was actually a couple of Secret Service agents. Ari Fleischer held up a sign and said, "Don't leave yet." Other Secret Service agents held the president in the school. That's why, because sitting on that stage, he could not take command of anything. He was reading to children. The cameras were on him. He had a perfect excuse, the perfect alibi for not being in command, and that's exactly where Dick Cheney wanted him. Dick Cheney was the acting commander-in-chief, and the Secret Service was the supreme command. Here's the motive for the crime. Peak oil. In about 100 years, mankind has used roughly half of all the oil that nature placed on this planet. That simple. We'll talk more about that in detail. We have clearly established in crossing the Rubicon with documentary records, not only from the Vice President's Energy Task Force, but from a number of other sources. They're all laid out in the book, that there was clear knowledge that this crisis was coming a long time before 9/11. I know that Dick...
Now, this guy's putting it out there that 9/11 was all about oil and how it's grown to be a shortage. I personally don't buy that. I'm not there yet to subscribe to that thought. It could be a disinformation. I truly believe 9/11 had a different agenda. I don't think it was about oil. I mean, I could be wrong. Someone out there wants to prove me wrong, I'm willing to listen, but I just don't buy it.
Is reliant upon oil. All plastic is made of oil. There are 10 calories of hydrocarbon energy in every calorie of food that you eat. Society is reliant upon oil. All plastic is made of oil. There are 10 calories of hydrocarbon energy in every calorie.
Listen, about this peak oil thing, I've read some sources that it could be a good scare to... The world really may not be low on oil, that it may be actually a money-making scheme. I really don't know how to articulate it right now because I can't remember everything that this source said. But you keep that in mind. I mean, this guy may be putting out anti-9/11 information, whatever. But and like I said, all these people that I have on Ghost Wolf Radio, I'm not saying they have all the answers. We need to swim through all of this stuff and just find our nuggets of truth here and there and construct our own ideology. You probably already have a solid basis for your ideology, meaning you believe in the survival of the white race. But, like everything this guy is saying, I'm not going to buy everything. I'm just looking for that one or two nuggets of truth that I can get from him that's going to make my revolutionary path more sound. Back to the video.
...of food that you eat. I'm going to let that sink in for a second. When a farmer plants a field, he drives a hydrocarbon-powered vehicle to till the soil. Then he comes back along with a hydrocarbon-powered vehicle to plant the seed. Then he has to pump water, irrigation, and how does the electricity get generated? Natural gas or oil or coal. Then he comes along and sprays it with fertilizers. All commercial fertilizers are made from natural gas, the source of ammonia. Then he sprays it with pesticides. All commercial pesticides are made from oil. Then he comes along in a hydrocarbon-powered vehicle again and harvests it, puts it in another hydrocarbon-powered vehicle, drives it to a food processing plant that runs on electricity and throws more chemicals in it, wraps it in plastic, which is oil, throws it into another hydrocarbon-powered vehicle, which drives it to your supermarket, where you walk in, pull out a piece of plastic, also oil, and pay for it. Hydrocarbon energy is diminishing. We eat oil and natural gas. 4 days after becoming vice president, 4 days, Dick Cheney convened his National Energy Policy Development Group, NEPDG, which I believe contains the deepest, darkest secrets of 9/11. And he's refused to release the documents. It became a Supreme Court case. And the Supreme Court, well, the Supreme Court, you know, how many people believe that we have a Supreme Court? We have a Republican court, of course, upheld a grossly unconstitutional action because that group was funded by taxpayer dollars that involved private corporations having access to in secret to a government-sponsored entity. That's blatantly unconstitutional. Suits were filed. A couple of documents came out. We'll talk about that in a minute. Dick Cheney knew about peak oil as early as 1999. And 9/11 made possible what Dick Cheney called the war that will not end in our lifetimes. I'll never forget watching him say that on television. We are chasing the last remaining hydrocarbon energy reserves around the planet. And this is something I said at From the Wilderness 3+ years ago. And it was a map that we laid out 3+ years ago, and the world is following the map. Now, whether you believe or not that the world is running out of oil, if you are reasonably sane and off your medication, you will have to believe that the world is acting as if peak oil were real. Yes? Yes. Opportunity. Means, motive, and opportunity. The war games. We broke these down, and this was... And I have to pay homage to researcher Barbara Honegger, who kept asking me to look at the war games. She didn't quite get how they all work together, but she kept hammering me, and she gave me some great information. And finally, I sat down and locked myself in a room for about 2.5, 3 days with the raw data on the war games, and I saw the picture. And I saw what happened on 9/11. In May of 2001... Dick Cheney was placed directly in charge of managing the seamless integration of all training exercises throughout the federal government and military agencies by a presidential directive from the White House. The morning of 9/11 began with a series of what we put in the book of four confirmed hijack drills involving NORAD, the North American Aerospace Defense Command, and the FAA. And one was Vigilant Guardian, which was a hijack drill. We confirmed through press stories that that drill involved the insertion of false radar blips on radar screens in the Northeast Air Defense Sector. Then another one was Northern Vigilance, scheduled sometime before 9/11, which had moved large numbers of fighter aircraft out of the Northeast Air Defense Sector to Canada and Alaska, anticipating an over-the-pole Soviet attack. Now, for those of us who were my age, I'm 53, we remember the duck-and-cover drills in high school when the Russians were going to come over the pole and attack. Those are drills from the 60s, the 70s. That drill was scheduled simultaneously with Vigilant Guardian. We also discovered Northern Vigilance, which I have confirmed since the book was published. Somebody read the book and dug up some non-classified documents confirming that more fighters had been moved to Iceland on 9/11, out, and so they were unavailable to respond. And the bottom line is that when the hijackings, in quotes, occurred on September the 11th, the FAA controllers were looking at their radar screens, and we have on the record statements from Jane Garvey of the FAA, among others, that we got 11 possible hijackings, and I confirmed at the time that there were no more than 8 fighters. Now, fighters always fly together. So you've got 11 possible, but one other statement said 22 possible hijackings. That was accounting for some of the false radar injects. Then Richard Clark comes out with his book, Against All Enemies, this last year. And boy, he left more clues in that book than any detective would ever want to be happy with. But he quoted then the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the acting chairman, General Richard Myers, who was now the chairman, as saying, we're in the middle of another exercise called Vigilant Warrior. And I was able to obtain, because of all the 9/11 books that are out there, and there are some good ones out there, I express a lot of confidence in David Ray Griffin's work, and also especially in Paul Thompson's wonderful 9/11 timeline. Paul Thompson has done some amazing work, and those are two books that belong in your 9/11 library for sure. But we dug and we looked, but I'm the only guy that has gone out and actually knocked on doors. I mean, I was a detective. And I've done original investigative research, and part of me wanted to do my 9/11 research like Andy Sipowicz from NYPD Blue, you know, where I could throw people around a little bit, you know, and kind of rough them up. But you can't do that with generals and, you know, appointed. So I played Columbo. You know, you got... Now, wait a minute. You got 4 or 5 different exercises going and 22 possible hijacks. What idiot scheduled all of these things to happen all on September the 11th? And nobody would tell me. I got as high as a deputy secretary of defense for public affairs. And nobody would tell me. And then I found the paper trail, and it was Dick Cheney, who was running them all on 9/11. So... But the problem is Dick Cheney is not in jail. And if I keep this up, I may soon be. Will you come visit me if they want?
Hey, one of the responses it says here is, there's this guy here. It says, what a smart man he is and courageous, too. Yeah, I think he's a smart guy. I think he's courageous. And someone says, peak oil is the second problem. Peak credit will be the first to collapse the U.S. economy. And then it says, if you saw a collapse, I saw a collapse. It's like a movie where he just talked the whole time about different things, peak oil and other stuff. It was on demand on Comcast. So just remember, this guy has worked with the CIA since he was a kid, and he says he's on the hit list of Cheney, etc., but he's not dead. So I figured this guy at most is a source of disinformation, possibly from the CIA, or maybe he's just making money the only way he can. He makes a good case, but there is some slop in his statements. So.
Okay, all right.
We're smart enough to take all this with a grain of salt.
So I got a hold of this Major Don Arias. Really wonderful, a nice guy. My father was Air Force. My mother had been cryptanalyst for Secretary of State Cordell Hull during the Second World War at the Army Security Agency, which was the forerunner of the NSA. My father left the Air Force, went to work for Martin Marietta on Titan 3C, which was the booster for all of the CIA's, the old spy satellites. Everybody in my family had a clearance. I used to come home from school and say, what's for dinner? And Mom would say, I can't tell you. But I get along good with Air Force people because I was an Air Force brat. So I'm yakking, and I make good friends with this Major Don Arias, who is the public affairs officer at Tyndall Air Force Base in Florida, which is where the first scramble orders were issued on 9/11. And he was working that day. And he finally sent me an email after I'm asking him those questions and made friends. And he actually confirmed that the live fly exercise, all of the codenamed exercises have meanings in the military. They have books by who can use vigilant, who can use warrior, and what the combination of words mean. And he sent me back a written confirmation that the exercise mentioned by General Myers was a live fly hijack drill. Now, what that means for you lay people out there is that an Air Force officer from NORAD confirmed to me that NORAD was flying airplanes that were posing as hijacked airliners on September the 11th. You haven't heard anything about that, have you? No, you ought to read the book. It's a good book. An interesting thing about Don Arias. Don Arias has a brother who worked at the World Trade Center. And as I'm piecing together forensically the timelines, as I'm piecing together, and my God, it was mind-breaking work. Ken saw me many times unshaven and disheveled and with kind of the mad scientist look. It occurred to me, and it became very clear, that everybody in the system knew that Flight 175, the second plane to hit the World Trade Center, had been hijacked, and nobody warned the people in the South Tower. And then I found one press account that Don Arias had actually left his post that day to call his brother in the World Trade Center and told him to get out because nobody else was warning anybody. And that was Major Arias's motive for sending me the confirmation. It's a very telling and it's a very heart-rending chapter to read the callousness with which Rudy Giuliani, Dick Cheney, General Ralph Eberhardt, General Richard Myers, all of the National Military Command Center staff, and everybody in the PEOC sat there and let the people in the South Tower die because they knew the second plane was coming. And I proved that they knew it was coming, and they just let him die. Now, whoever was coordinating the Air Force war games was under the management direction of Dick Cheney, who was also in charge of another terror drill being set up on the west side of New York. It was a bioterror drill called Tripod 2 being set up on Pier 29 on Manhattan's lower west side. And FEMA was already there. And if you read the paper trail that was putting Dick Cheney in charge of all the war game planning back in May, he was coordinating all training, not just in the military, because the FBI, Department of Justice, Health and Human Services, Centers for Disease Control, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, are not military. So all of that was placed under the aegis or under the umbrella of FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Administration. And FEMA was setting up a complete command post on the morning of September the 11th, just by coincidence, another war game. And that command post was used, as a matter of fact, by one of my several key persons of interest in the attacks of 9/11, Jerome Hauer, who was a bioterror expert connected with about every evil pharmaceutical company you can possibly imagine. But everything led back to one man and one man only, Dick Cheney, in the basement of the White House. Now, there's two separate command centers in the White House. You have the Situation Room upstairs, which is the place from where Richard Clark, Norm Mineta, when he was traveling, but all the government officials were officially doing his work. But there's some interesting quotes in Richard Clark's book, and this is another one that made me laugh, that where Clark keeps saying, you know, I can't figure out why the vice president keeps hanging up on me. Gee. This is a case that I, as a detective, would take to a district attorney tomorrow. I would take Crossing the Rubicon, drop it in the lap of the DA, and I say, I want a filing for murder, premeditated, first degree, multiple counts, with special circumstances. Now, we talked briefly about the Energy Task Force, NEPDG. Everybody started fighting their secrecy way back long before 9/11, way back before the first plane hit. Congressman Henry Waxman of California fought very hard. The Sierra Club fought very hard. Judicial Watch fought very hard. Lawsuits were filed. Seven pages of documents finally leaked, just seven, from the NEPDG. And among them, it was a list of every oil company and every bit of ownership in all the oil fields in Iraq, Saudi Arabia, and the Emirates. That's one of the things that we're listing. Basically, what they were talking about was, where is all the oil in the world, and who do we have to deal with, bribe, kill, or make friends or blackmail to get it. Now, as you put the maps that came out of NAPDG together, this is a map I constructed from their maps because I had to do a cut and paste overlay, but this is the oil fields they were looking at. Now, I want you to understand something. That right there, ladies and gentlemen, is 60% of all the recoverable oil on planet Earth. 60%. If you overlay that into the state of Texas, you see roughly the size of the area. Now, where have we deployed since 9/11? Well, gee, we deployed all around here. We put troops up here in Georgia. We've occupied Iraq. Turkey's part of NATO. We're heavily involved in Israel. Yeah, we've got troops now in Yemen and Djibouti. The British control Oman. We have surrounded 60% of all the oil on the planet. It's consistent with the motive, is it not? And that 60% is going to become very important when you understand that. We'll come to this later on. Oil discoveries have been in progressive decline since 1962. There's no more oil to find. I will prove that to you before the night's over, or very little oil left to find. So if that's all there is, that's what you got to get. And whoever gets it eats, and whoever doesn't get it dies, which is going to make Iran all the more critical, which is part of that herd of charging elephants that are descending upon us. Let's go back to May 2001, a critical month, when the NAPDG report was released. America in the year 2001 faces the most serious energy shortage since the oil embargoes of the 1970s. Estimates indicate that over the next 20 years, U.S. oil consumption will increase by 33%, natural gas by well over 50%, and demand for electricity by 45%. U.S. energy consumption is expected to increase by about 32% by 2020. Between 2000 and 2020, U.S. natural gas demand is projected by the Energy Information Administration to increase by more than 50%. Yet we produce 39% less oil today than we did in 1970. 1970 was the year that the United States oil production peaked. We have been in irreversible decline since 1970 within the United States, leaving us ever more reliant on foreign suppliers. On our present course, America 20 years from now will import nearly 2 of every 3 barrels of oil, a condition of increased dependency on foreign powers that, quote-unquote, do not always have America's best interests at heart. My response to that is, why the hell should they? These are the war game exercises. Again, part of this, I would encourage you to get the book and read it, so that you can understand what happened on 9/11, because you will look ahead for future announcements of war games or anything like war games, and you will look for possible connections or possible patterns developing similar to that. And I want to stress that since the book has been published, I've confirmed 2 more separate war games, all of which were scheduled on September the 11th. I'm going to skip through some of this. This is all, I mean, does anybody doubt that Condoleezza Rice was lying when she said we had no idea that anybody would use a plane to crash as a weapon into a building? Okay. I mean, there were drills for it. The World Trade Center was even set aside as a target. We've confirmed a number of lies. We've confirmed numerous lies and inconsistencies in the Keene Commission report. This is the quote from Richard Clark's book, where he says here, not a pretty picture, Dick. Dick Myers himself, a fighter pilot, knew that the days when we had scores of fighters on strip alert had ended with the Cold War. We're in the middle of Vigilant Warrior, a NORAD exercise. And that's the one where I got the email from Don Arias confirming later that that was a live fly drill. Here's the excerpt from the email that I received from Major Arias. Excerpt of email. NORAD instruction 33-7, nicknames. It's all milspeak. A combination of 2 separate unclassified words, which is assigned an unclassified meaning. A nickname is used exclusively to designate a drill or exercise. Exercise terms are used to prevent confusion between exercise directives and actual operations. There's supposed to be a firewall between drills and operation. On 9/11, that firewall did not exist. It was deliberately dismantled by Dick Cheney. Vigilant or amalgam means it is a headquarters NORAD-sponsored exercise. Guardian means it is a multi-command CPX command post exercise, which means there's no live fly. It's all a tabletop exercise. So on 9/11, NORAD was conducting a NORAD-wide multi-command command post exercise with no live fly. Other exercise terms include Warrior, JCS, Joint Chiefs of Staff, Headquarters NORAD-sponsored field training exercise, live fly. I have that in writing, along with all the email headers showing that that came to me from a United States Air Force officer. That's written confirmation. Now we come to the wonderful 9/11 Commission. How many of you think that the 9/11 Commission did a good job? Okay. We just went through, Michael Caine did this again, and this was the original submissions to the 9/11 Commission from all the evidence, from all the witnesses who had testified for them about the timing of specific events on September the 11th. This is what their final report was, and what that means is that after they'd taken all the testimony, they went into chambers and wrote their report and came out with this whole new list of times, and nobody had ever submitted those times. It's like the judge going into chambers in the middle of a trial, having looked at the evidence from the defense and the prosecution, and the judge walks out with a whole new set of evidence that nobody had walked into court with. And you know what the military said? Gee, thanks, we're glad you straightened us out. We have to get past any illusions here. And what did they say about war games? The only mention of any war game was in a footnote, the 9/11 report. Footnote 116 on 9/11, NORAD was scheduled, and they lied. They say Vigilant Guardian was the hijack exercise. It was Northern Vigilance, which was the Soviet drill. So they're trying to confuse you again by lying. I have the original records showing what the drills were. So they lied even in a footnote to the report. Now, many skeptics out there, excuse me, many people out there who love to attack us conspiracy theorists. I don't deal in conspiracy theory, I deal in conspiracy fact. Say that it's impossible to have a conspiracy of this size with thousands of people knowing and somebody would have talked. And my answer is, you bozos, you buy it the line every time, don't you? How many people have ever heard of the Manhattan Project? Manhattan Project, you know, the first atom bomb? Well, there were tens of thousands of people involved in that, and that secret didn't leak until the bomb dropped on Hiroshima, did it? How many people have heard of the F-117A stealth fighter? Gee, that was a secret for a long time. Thousands of people involved in that. That didn't leak until they finally announced it. Of course, they crashed a few and all that stuff, but people didn't really know what it was. And it's all dealt with, and I come from that milieu. I was raised in that milieu, and I worked, you know, the CIA tried to recruit me because of my family background when I was a cop. But, I mean, I grew up knowing about compartment. I had a Q clearance because I lived in the same house with my parents. I'm serious, because my dad might have left his briefcase open. You deal with that by compartmentalization. A guy mining some uranium ore in Tennessee wouldn't have any idea that he was doing it for an atom bomb. A guy mixing epoxy resin wouldn't have any...
Okay, that's all about the time we have for that. I've used up 35 minutes of his speech. This first part goes for 57 minutes. The second part goes for an hour and... hour and 1 minute and 39 seconds. So if you want to check it out, go to YouTube and check out Michael C. Rupert, R-U-P-P-E-E-R-T, Talk by Michael C. Rupert, Part 1, you know. I like to get a lot of different perspectives and stuff like this. But what do you think? Do you think that peak oil is real? Do you think it's a scare tactic? I'll tell you what, if it is a scare tactic, I won't be surprised.
Well, incidentally, I interrupted the speech of his twice because when I recorded it the first time, you know, after listening to this, you probably heard me interrupt the speech twice almost saying practically the same thing. Well, I forgot when I interrupted it the first time. That's when I was listening to the tape again the second time to, check it out, because I forgot kind of what I recorded. But we need to consider all the facts. We need to consider all the statements. You know, all the statements that we've had from various people. You have assholes like Maurice Strong, who wants to deindustrialize the United States and never allow a nation to have that kind of industrial power again, that we need to go back to being friendly to the earth, and that means basically going back to the Stone Age. I wonder if he feels that way about China, because he lives in China. He's got armed guards all around his domicile in China. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, he's got pretty elaborate fences with barbed wire and all kinds of stuff. It's amazing. These people can go jet set around the world, these people without a country, these internationalists. If there was any justice in the world, one, two, or three of those planes would go down because of, faulty engine parts or something. But I play this guy. I'm going to tell you right now, I don't 100% trust this guy, this Michael C. Rupert. I saw his documentary Collapse, talking pretty much about the same stuff. He may have been a cop, but he was affiliated with the CIA for a while. I tried to recruit him, I guess. So he says. Anything that comes out of any one of their mouths, whether it be this guy or any TV talking head or any banker or, Timothy Geithner, Bernanke, anyone, I automatically assume that they're telling me 20% truth and 80% lies. And whether this guy falls into that, I don't know. So he says that 9/11 was all about peak oil. And he may be exposing a lot of things about Cheney and this and that, and that don't aren't too flattering of Cheney. But if that's the truth, then it kind of gives the Bush administration a little bit of, they retain a little bit of their honor in the sense that, well, we're running out of oil and we want to get the oil so Americans can have oil. We would conclude that in our mind, even though he presents it like in a bad way. The system will do that. The system will orchestrate and organize their own opposition. They would rather have themselves organize and set up their own opposition than have us do it on our own. Because if they organize and set up their own opposition, we'll rally around that, then they can control it. Just listen to Glenn Beck this morning on the radio. And he's exposing all this stuff, about the Black Panther guy in Philadelphia talking about how he hates white people. Then he played some Khalid Muhammad about how they want to kill all the white babies. Then he played an interview of an ex-Weather Underground member, and I believe his interview was in the 80s, and he's talking about their last organized above-ground meeting, how they threw around the idea of killing all the white babies because the white babies will grow up to be part of the oppressive system. And they played some audio of an FBI and agent who infiltrated the Weather Underground and how they knew that when they took over the government, that there was a lot of talk about, how are we going to clothe and feed, 250 million people, the population of America at that time. And we got to understand also that China and Russia will try to occupy certain parts of North America because the government will have fallen. And they talked. He talked about that they were saying that there would be re-education camps set up in the Southwest. This is what the Weather Underground was going to do when they come into power. And people who were resistant to re-education would be liquidated. And essentially, they said that we'd have to liquidate 25 million people in the country. You know. So he gives all these facts. And he says that, you know, the system is just poking at us right now because the system wants to instigate a race war. Well, I don't know. How do you feel about that? I mean, you get all these TV talking heads and all these sitcoms and movies that promote interracial brotherhood. And then they start... And then this guy says that, you know, they're trying to instigate a race war. Well, we won't fall for it. We will be nonviolent because we must keep our honor intact. I say that's bullshit. I say if they instigate a race war, we need to be one man and one woman weapons of mass destruction. We need to hack. We need to slice their throat. We need to do whatever. We need to become the most ruthless, featherless bipeds who ever walked the face of this planet. We need to be so ruthless when this comes knocking on our door that our ancient Viking and Saxon ancestors would be shocked at our brutality. I'm serious. You know, I have an inner conflict about all this. I mean, you know, I still haven't abandoned the whole God thing, you know. I guess deep down inside, I want someone to be in charge of all this bullshit existence that we live in. All of us grew up with all these lies about country and patriotism and good government bullshit. And we see now that it's all bullshit. So consider all the facts that you can obtain in your own personal journey. I read books. When I go on YouTube, I don't really watch metal videos anymore. Hardly ever. I may play one at the beginning of a show only because I like how it adds to the spirit of my show. But I really listen to other things. Speeches and statements and people who are illuminating certain parts of the government or America or, you know, how people are being controlled through Madison Avenue type of tactics. So consider all the facts and all the statements and consider all the false flag operations that have brought us to this place and time. I'm not talking about 9/11. You know, World War II, our entry in that was started by a deception, by a lie. Our entry in World War I was by a lie. Our entry into the war against the Spanish was a lie. The Vietnam War was, our participation in that was based on a lie. So why would we think it not feasible for the government, for the system, for this internationalist system to construct their own opposition, something that we will rally around because we perceive it to be an opposition to the system, and we just fall right in their hands like putty? That's what I believe Fox News is. It isn't. It is the opposition to the system organized by the system. And how many of these people call in to Glenn Beck and go to his little, you know, 828 project and all this other crap because they think they're rebelling against the system? They're not. All this Tea Party stuff is not going to stop the further enslavement of America. And while the internationals have this conspiracy, I believe there is a lot of talk in the black community about killing white people. the internationalists may know about the blacks and what they're saying about whites and this and that. Of course they don't care because they know it's no threat to their position. In fact, though, they may instigate it just to get our attention off of them. Well, like I've said before, the apex of the pyramid can only be brought down by disrupting the foundation. And we are the foundation of that pyramid. So I wish I had more definite answers. I hope some of you out there can fill in some of the blanks on all this. If you have a different way of looking at this, I would love to hear from you. Email me at blackhoodedsaxon@gmail.com. If you don't want to make contact with me, send it to Metzger. That's fine. Well, we must secure the existence of our people and the future for white children. Carpe Noctem. Seize the night.
There he goes, Slingblade. Yeah. Alias Ghost Wolf. Alias Michael Myers. I think we even had a couple of more other non-deplumes for Slingblade. This reminds me of what he was talking about, because I went pretty big on Peak Oil way back. A year or so ago, maybe 2 years. I used to argue with Wall Street. I think he was right. I think this running out of oil deal, Peak Oil, is baloney because they're into the shale and all that, fracking and all that, and they got oil running out their ears. So I don't think that 9/11 fiasco was about oil. Or at least the main issue was not about oil. Yeah. Like he says, you got to look all over the place. You get a little piece of the truth here, you get a little piece of the truth there, then you think you got a whole bunch of the truth, and then you keep studying, and you find out, whoops, I was really off on that one. We got to always be prepared to be wrong, but we should also try to be prepared to be right. That's right. Well, I see the Washington bastards made a deal to get Gross out of Cuba. I think Gross was a Jew, and he was definitely stealing secrets and selling equipment to people it was against the law to sell in Cuba. So it looks like they've traded him for two or three Cubans we had in prison or jail up here. But anyhow, I'd have kept the bastard in there for 20 years. Yeah. Well, that right-wing Supreme Court Judge Scalia, he was on TV yesterday saying, it's okay. It's okay to torture people. Torture's okay. Yeah. Well, that's it for Slingblade, another Slingblade show, and we'll be back here tomorrow on Thursday, and I promise we're going to get into this Hitler situation once and for all. We're going to get really into it, and then we're going to forget about it. I get tired of talking about Hitler. And I certainly don't want to argue with these guys in right-wing Nazis because, number one, they're not National Socialists. Most of them are promoting capitalism, which was not National Socialism. And we'll be talking about how the system loves a Hollywood Nazi group running around to keep your mind off the more important things and some Ku Klux Klanners and their in robes running around. And so, yeah, they like that. Sometimes they even pay them. If you can't convince somebody that's counterproductive and actually plays into the hands of the system to march around with Nazi uniforms on, well, I'm afraid you're a retard. Incidentally, I had a nice talk with Richard Scutari last night on the phone discussing his should be coming up parole at least by 2016, and talking about some of the other POWs, and anybody out there know the situation with Randy Dewey? I'm not sure of that. I should look on the Federal Register and see where he's at. I haven't had any word from him. If you know about what's going on with him or how soon he's looking at parole, let me know. Okay, 14-5, and shut up, and I'll see you tomorrow.